TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Hello, welcome in. Raised by Wolves, Danny Cunningham. And today we're taking a look at the defending NBA champions as the Toronto Raptors come to town this Saturday. So I thought it'd be a good idea to have a quick chat with Josh Lewenberg, who covers the team for TSN all the way up in Toronto, Canada. Raptors have been a pleasant surprise this year as they've been really good despite Kawhi Leonard heading west to LA, heading home to the Clippers. And the Raptors are still in fourth in the East. Absolute playoff team, and certainly a team that has turned a lot of heads across the NBA. So I thought it'd be great to sit down with him and chat about what the champs are doing this year and what the future plans might hold for them. Josh, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
I'm going to assume that you haven't held any meetings at Drake's house, but if you have, I really want to know how cool that is.
My invitation must have gotten lost in the mail.
That's really unfortunate. Kind of a bizarre story that came out about Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, and you can read that at ESPN.com if you care to do so. But even with no Kawhi Leonard, the Raptors have certainly been one of the, I don't want to say surprises of the season, but certainly a bright spot this season with how good that they've been so far. What's it been like kind of celebrating a championship all the while the team does look a little bit different because the best player is gone, but they're still really good?
Yeah, I think surprise is fair. I mean, especially league-wide where the expectations were pretty low. And even locally, like, I think people knew that the Raptors were going to be good as long as they had the roster that they were going to have going into the season. I mean, obviously there was some uncertainty as to whether or not there would be big moves made ahead of the trade deadline. And, I mean, that's still the case with the deadline a few weeks away. But I think knowing how valuable Kyle Lowry is and has been over the years, and Marc Gasol, Serge Ibaka, the assumed leap that Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet were going to take this year, there was a pretty good idea that the Raptors were going to be competitive, but I do think there still was that uncertainty going in without Kawhi Leonard, without Danny Green. So I almost compare them to the team that the Raptors are actually about to face, and that you guys just saw in Oklahoma City, a couple of teams that lost a lot of talent over the summer. Of course, the Raptors, the reigning finals MVP and Kawhi Leonard, and then the Thunder losing their two best players in Paul George and Russell Westbrook. But maybe that's where the comparison ends, because the Thunder are doing it with some of the players that they got back. Obviously, Chris Paul, still a star. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the Canadian, is turning into a star. Danilo Gallinari, a really good player as well. But for the Raptors, they're doing it with the guys that have come back, the returning players, the guys that I just mentioned. And I think for them, it's been really important to make that statement that it wasn't just Kawhi, that those other guys had a lot to do with the Raptors' success last year and the Raptors' championship, and they're proving it now.
I think even aside from that is that they're proving that with so many guys that have been in and out of the lineup. Pascal Siakam missed time. Marc Gasol has recently missed time. Kyle Lowry missed time. Fred VanVleet's been out. They've done this with it seems like a different collection of bodies every night. And I really think that is certainly a testament to Nick Nurse and just how good of a coaching job that he's done, not only last year in winning the title in his first year on the job, but this year as well.
Well, I would agree. Yeah, I would say if the season ended today, Nick Nurse would be my coach of the year favorite. And obviously there are other guys around the league. I mean, just at the top of my head, Eric Spoelstra and Billy Donovan, I mentioned OKC, deserve a lot of credit as well. But yeah, I think with those injuries, you look at what the Raptors have had to deal with, and six of their top seven players have already missed at least eight games. And by the time the halfway point of the season rolls along, six of their top seven will have missed 10 games, because it doesn't seem like VanVleet is coming back anytime soon, or at least not over the next week. So that's significant. I mean, obviously, when you talk about they're third right now in the NBA in man games lost to injury, and you look at the teams either above or around them and what they've lost, Indiana without Oladipo the entire season to this point anyways, Golden State without Klay Thompson for the whole season, without Steph for most of it, Washington's missed John Wall. But I would argue that what the Raptors have dealt with is actually tougher than being without one really good player for the entire season. When you're missing one guy, you can plan around that, and there's some consistency there. You know what's coming, and you know who you've got, whereas with the Raptors, it's been like one step forward, two steps back. One guy comes back into the lineup and you lose a couple of other guys. They've had a rotating roster, constant roster rotation uncertainty all season long. So I do think that's a credit to the coaching staff and Nick Nurse and what they've done and how they've had their guys prepared, but then also a lot of the Raptors role players that have stepped up. We talked about the main guys, the top seven, but Terrence Davis, an undrafted rookie, has really stepped up. Chris Boucher, a Canadian, also undrafted, the G League MVP last year, has stepped up. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson has been a pleasant surprise. So they've gotten contributions from pretty much everybody on the roster. And yeah, they went 8-2 without Lowry and Ibaka early in the season. They went 6-5 without Siakam, Gasol, and Norman Powell in the lineup. So that's been a big part of their narrative this year, is how they've managed to not only survive the injuries, but thrive in spite of them.
I was going to ask you this a little bit later, but since you brought it up, I want to dive into it now. How do they keep kind of finding these diamonds in the rough? I mean, once upon a time, it was Fred VanVleet, who now looks like he's going to be rewarded handsomely this summer. But like Chris Boucher, Terrence Davis, they keep finding these guys that I don't know where they come from, and suddenly they can become super successful once they get a little bit of time in Toronto.
They've certainly developed a reputation, and I think we have to be careful here because you do want to credit the scouting staff of the Raptors and the development staff of the Raptors for helping these guys along and help turning guys like Pascal Siakam from a surprise 27th overall pick and a one-dimensional energy type player to what he's turned into today, a budding superstar in the NBA, VanVleet undrafted to what he is today. But at the same time, the bulk of the credit, as we know, goes to those players, those guys that have put in the work to turn themselves into those players, to become self-made stars. And I do think that that's maybe where the common denominator is, where the connection is, because guys like VanVleet, Siakam, Norman Powell, all these players, what they have in common, I think, in addition to the work ethic, is their approach and their mindset. They're guys with that chip on their shoulder. They always have something to prove. And the Raptors really do look for that quality in guys when they're doing interviews before the draft, or they're looking around, even when they're making trades or signing free agents. That's a quality that they look for. Another thing that I'll say is because they've built this reputation, all of a sudden players are flocking to it. So I'll use Terrence Davis as an example. He's a player, once he did go undrafted, and that was by choice, at least towards the end of the second round. There were a number of teams that were interested in him but wanted to sign him to a two-way contract and have him spend a lot of time in the G League, and he and his agent asked those teams not to draft him. They wanted to, essentially, as VanVleet likes to say, bet on himself and choose their destination because he believed he was an NBA player. And then once he had a really big game, his first game, I believe it was with Denver in the summer league, all these teams were calling his agent and offering NBA contracts. But he chose the Raptors in large part because he knows about the success of VanVleet, another undrafted guy, or Siakam or Powell. So I do think that in the same way that teams that are really successful in going out and getting free agents because of the city that they're located in or the success of their franchise or whatever it is, the Raptors have become a big-time destination, I think, for those undrafted guys or those guys that are looking to really change their narrative and turn themselves into NBA players.
And Siakam, I think, is the most interesting of that group because of the leap he made from the end of 2018 to the end of last year. Obviously, was rewarded with the most improved player. And I think that the leap he's made from the end of last year to currently is even more impressive. And I think he should be someone considered for that award again 2 years in a row, as odd as that may sound. What do you think the ceiling for a guy like him is?
It's so hard to say because we keep giving him a ceiling and he keeps breaking right through it. So it's one of those things where nobody could have imagined, if the Raptors included, that he would become the player he's already become. So who knows how much more growth he has. But the thing is, if you're going to bet on anybody in the NBA, if you're an NBA team, you're looking to sign, you're wondering whether or not to sign a guy to a big contract, a big extension, the guys that you want to bet on are guys like Siakam that have the work ethic and the drive to reach the ceiling, whatever that ceiling might be. A good example I'll give you is there's been some understandable growing pains for Siakam this season. It was expected because this is his first time, not just in the NBA, but really ever, like in his life, being the focal point of an offense, being the guy, the go-to guy. There was going to be a learning curve, and he's had some rough games, some rough nights, but even in the games that have been pretty good, like there's been nights where he's scored 20, 25, even 30 points, and you talk to him after the game and ask him about his play, what he liked, what he didn't like. He'll never pat himself on the back. He'll never talk about the scoring or any of the things that he did well. It's like the first thing that comes to mind is he'll mention he needed to be more aggressive at this point in the game. Maybe he didn't have a great third quarter. We'll talk about the third quarter. Early in the season, he was getting into foul trouble, and he talked a lot about how he has to play smarter and stay out of foul trouble, even though he was playing really well during that stretch. So he's constantly trying to identify weaknesses in his game and turn them into strengths, and that's what he's already done. I mean, he was, early in his career, not a good three-point shooter. I mean, maybe that's being generous because his second season in the NBA was one of the worst three-point shooting seasons that anybody has had in league history. I think he shot like 20% on a pretty high volume, but he identified that as a weakness. He put in the work, and he turned it into a strength. Now he's an above-average three-point shooter. So it's things like that, I think, that allow guys to go from being a good player to a great player to a star to a superstar. And that's the trajectory that Siakam's on right now.
And as far as how this team is going now, they're fourth in the East, but as we've mentioned, there have been guys in and out of the lineup so far, and that has skewed the record a little bit. What do you think the expectations for this team come playoff time? Because they are one of the six teams in the East that are a lock to make the playoffs, certainly. What do you think the expectations are come April and possibly May, and who knows?
Well, the biggest challenge for us covering the team and trying to evaluate what they are and what they could be has been the injuries, just not really seeing the full product to this point. And I think that's been a big challenge for the Raptors coaching staff and front office as well. Obviously, Nick Nurse wants to have a good idea of who his team is, and then certainly Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster want to know, going into the trade deadline, do they need to make a move? Are they buyers? Are they sellers? Are they standing pat? But the thing is, it's mostly guesswork right now. You want, at this point in the season, a few months in, to have a better idea, but it's just not a luxury the Raptors have had with the injuries. The hope here is that you look at what they've been able to accomplish under Mann, and you sort of project that, what they might be able to do if they continue to play as hard as they've been playing and as well defensively, but with all of their talent on the floor at the same time. Their ceiling is, I think, a lot higher than a lot of people expected before the season. They're not as good as Milwaukee is, but there's right now, it seems like, a pretty big drop-off in the Eastern Conference after that number one team. Milwaukee has sort of pulled away a little bit. And then there's that really tight race for second place. So I guess that would be their ceiling, is finishing second or third in the East. I do think there's a lot more to play for during the regular season this year if you're the Raptors than a year ago, when essentially we're just managing the Kawhi workload and looking ahead to the playoffs planning. Whereas now, first of all, you want home court advantage. That's important. And then there is a huge advantage for whoever finishes second in the East, because there's another massive drop-off after the top six teams. Whoever finishes in seventh and eighth right now, I believe that's Orlando and Brooklyn, you would much rather play them in the first round than seeing any of those teams in the top six: Indiana, Boston, Milwaukee, Toronto. There are some really good teams in that mix, Philadelphia, so Miami. So I do think these next few months here are important. The Raptors have to knock on wood here, cross their fingers, that they're not only finally getting healthy, but will actually stay healthy. They have the toughest stretches of their schedule behind them already. The upcoming schedule is relatively friendly for them. So I do think there is a big opportunity here. The next few weeks might be a little tricky, just because there is that built-in adjustment period when you're bringing guys back. The Raptors lost three games in a row when they brought Lowry and Ibaka back early the season, four or five games, probably their worst stretch of the season. And now they've already dropped one since Siakam and Powell have returned. So you might have to take a bit of a step backwards here before you take the step forwards. But I do think that once these guys start coming back, there is a big opportunity for the Raptors to make some noise in the East.
When they traded for Kawhi last year, everyone knew that it was win a title or bust, because chances are he wasn't going to be around for a second opportunity at it. That happened. That was deemed successful, obviously. What is a success this season, do you think, for the Raptors?
I think the Raptors are playing with house money right now. I really do. Like, I don't think, I mean, not making the playoffs would have been a failure. I would say still losing in the first round would be a disappointment and a failure. But outside of that, I mean, the Raptors as an organization in the city, in the country, they have built themselves a ton of goodwill. First of all, they're coming off of the championship, so I think that alone gives you a lot of flexibility in terms of how you do the next few years before people really get anxious. But then also there's this idea that is floating around in Toronto and even throughout the NBA that Giannis Antetokounmpo might be available in the summer of 2021. If he doesn't sign that max extension in Milwaukee this summer, that'll be the case, and that's one of the biggest free agent classes in recent memory. And the Raptors have lined themselves up to have maximum financial flexibility that summer. Just about every decision that they've made since Kawhi has come with maintaining that flexibility. They signed Kyle Lowry to a one-year contract extension expiring in the summer of 2021. Pascal Siakam is the only guy that's under guaranteed contract at that point. Norman Powell, I think, has a player option, and then a few of the younger guys, but they're going to be players in that market. And it's one of the NBA's worst-kept secrets that Masai, like a lot of people, really likes Giannis and has been targeting him. So I think it's sort of a mixture of fans looking back at the championship, and obviously there's nostalgia there and there's still excitement from that, and then a lot of people looking forward and saying, okay, well, our next window is in 2021. So I do think they're sort of playing with house money this season and next season. They want to remain competitive, and that's smart, because if you want to chase Giannis or a big name free agent, as we saw from the Brooklyn Nets over the summer, landing Durant and Kyrie, and the Clippers getting Kawhi and Paul George, those two teams were competitive last year. That's, I think, a big part of how they were able to sell those guys on their franchise and saying, look what we did without you. Come here and imagine what we can do with you. I think it's really tough for a team like the Knicks, let's say, that have the money but don't have the success to sell a star on their situation. So the Raptors want to remain competitive. They have the talent to do it. I'm not sure that, I mean, obviously their ceiling is a lot lower now than it was last year in a perfect scenario where they're healthy and clicking and everything goes well, and maybe they get some breaks from some other teams. Maybe they can go to the Eastern Conference Finals. Maybe they can even come out of it if Milwaukee again struggles in the playoffs. So I do think there's a pretty big disparity between their ceiling and their floor. But ultimately, I think regardless of what happens here, it would be tough to look at the season and say, all right, this is a failure just based on how low the expectations were going in.
And Josh, that's exactly where I wanted to end this talk, was with the summer of 2021, because as you mentioned, everyone loves Giannis and Masai Ujiri does and absolutely should. And it does seem as if the biggest selling point is going to be the success that they've had. And to me, it almost feels a little bit like they are turning into what the Clippers were. And I'm not talking about the uncool Clippers. I'm talking about the way that the Clippers operated over the last two seasons, where they rebuilt themselves to try and make themselves sellable to stars, and it worked. And I can see that kind of being an avenue that the Raptors are going down, where they're really good, but they need that last piece to take them over the top.
Well, that's basically the only thing that's missing so far in terms of what this franchise has become, what it's turned itself into, because for a while, they hadn't had a star player that even wanted to stay in Toronto. I mean, going back all the way to the beginning, Damon Stoudemire, their first star, forced his way out. Tracy McGrady left. Vince Carter forced his way out. Chris Bosh left. And a couple of those guys, Carter and Bosh, they did sign a an extension initially, but that was off of their rookie contracts, where we know that most players coming off of their rookie contracts extend with their team. But they hadn't had a guy that was an unrestricted free agent that could really go anywhere that wanted to stay until DeMar DeRozan, who did it a couple times, and Kyle Lowry, who did it a couple times. So they've checked off that box. Obviously, they've checked off the championship box, which is a big, big one. They've really earned a lot of respect around the league, but the one thing that they still haven't done was gone out and recruited a big name, a superstar, on the open market. That's something that Masai Ujiri talked about the moment that he took the job atop of the Raptors front office. As he said, that was his goal, is to get meetings with those guys and to be able to legitimately sell themselves to those guys. And that's where they feel they're at right now. Not being able to keep Kawhi, I'm not sure that it set them back necessarily, but that was an opportunity to really make a statement. Yeah, that wasn't literally a free agent from another team. It wouldn't have been recruiting in that sense, but just based on his profile and how big a deal that was. If he had stayed, I really think that would have made the statement that maybe they're trying to make or hoping to make with Giannis or a big-name free agent in 2021. But yeah, that's still the step that they need to make as an organization that has taken 2.5 decades here, and they still haven't done. But to your point, they've done everything that they can do, that they can control. They can't control the weather. If you guys know that well in Minnesota,
too. Oh, yeah.
If players don't want to play in the cold, they're not going to come to Toronto or Minnesota if that's their top priority. Those are things you can't control. And obviously that was a big factor with Kawhi going home. But in terms of building the organization from the top to the bottom, well-regarded executives, the state-of-the-art practice court that they built within the last half decade, you've got a G League team that they've used really well, and obviously that reputation of developing players that we've talked about. They've got a competitive team on the court and young guys that are up and coming. So in terms of all those factors, they've checked off those boxes, and now there is going to be some pressure on them to go out once they do, because they haven't had money to spend over these last few years. Now they'll actually have that in 2021, probably for the first time since they have built up this really strong organizational foundation. So that, I think, will be a really big test to see whether or not they're finally in a position to change that narrative that still exists, that stigma that still exists around the NBA in terms of Toronto as a basketball city and Canada as a basketball country.
Josh Lewinberg, find him on Twitter at JLew1050. You can find him on TSN, TSN 1050 Radio, and TSN.ca. Josh, really appreciate you taking the time to do this. Thanks for chatting, man.
My pleasure. Take care.
Thank you for listening. As always, you can subscribe, you can rate, you can review, you can find the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the all-new Score North mobile app that's available for both your Apple and Android devices. Be sure to check that out and give that a nice review in the app stores as well. We would really appreciate it. Podcast will be back tomorrow. Myself and Dane Moore will be talking about the recent Wolves, what they've been doing, especially after tonight's game in Indiana. I'm sure we will have plenty to talk about. I'll talk to you then.